contemplation.
I want to talk for a few minutes about what social action looks like from the point of view of right view, the holistic view, the interbeing view, samadhi, first of the Noble Eightfold Path. What does social action feel like? It's not going to be a complete review, but some points that you can contemplate. And the first thing, very important thing to do, is to break down concepts of what spiritual work is and what social action is. And we have concepts, for example, that spiritual work is silent inner work that we do with ourselves, and when we stop doing spiritual work, we get up from our meditation and go out into the struggle of life, and we have a building model of spiritual practice in our minds, a kind of concept. And we might build another model of what social action is like. Oh, it's sort of organizations and busybodies running about, interfering with other people's lives, and generally trying to do good and sometimes making a big mess. And it's not for me. And there may be views, the spiritual people may have a view of social action, and the social people may have a view of spiritual action. But it's very important to break these down, because spirituality, for example, can be incredibly narcissistic. It can be about me and me and me, and even if we're busy with not self and being less of the self, it's actually a very subtle form of me being busy being not me. And we have to really be aware of, break these things down, and realize that spiritual activity is something that we may do privately in silence, in quietness, but it is exactly the same and sometimes more intense spiritual activity if we go out into the street and are challenged and tested. What is the quality of our heart and mind? When we go out into the workplace, when we go out into the schools, when we bring families into the world, there is a spiritual practice, and we just need to, you know, check ourselves that we're not developing concepts of what is spiritual practice and how different it is from social action. And I think that this retreat is an interesting model, because people have come from both sides here. People have come here with no experience of spiritual practice at all, come from social activist world, or a world, or at least being interested in social action, and we are finding all these long silent sitting periods when doing nothing and just having to cope with 45 minutes stuck in a certain sitting position, and what's all this about. And on the other side, people who are, you know, Vipassana practitioners, and saying, what are we doing with these funny exercises and all this talking going on and all this kind of discussion about things, and what's that to do with spirituality? And spirituality for me is watching my breath, and I don't understand all of this stuff. But in truth, what's been happening is a melting together, and I felt it yesterday. And the melting together is not just because of the retreat, it's because of something true, a truth, that spirituality is in breathing and in social action, because we act in the world. We can't not act. Every word we say is an act which goes out into the world. every action we do. So spirituality is in breathing, in sitting, in quietness, in action, in talking, in it cannot be otherwise. The Buddhist Eightfold Path is the training for spiritual action. And of the Eightfold Path, only three of the eight are what you call classic spiritual training. And five of the eight are interaction with others. So it's good to break that down, but skillful means, upaya, means that we know when to do what. And at times, indeed, we may need to withdraw and say, for my soul, I need to be quiet now. And at times, we may say, for my soul, this is the time to go out and test myself with taxi drivers in Tel Aviv, or with the guys in the workplace who just talk about football and politics. And I'm going to go right in there. Into that. That's my spiritual action for today. A common issue that I want to raise now is often a view that I'm not ready. I'm not ready to act. I'm not good enough. I want to wait until I'm better. And want to wait until I'm clearer, freer, egoistic. If I act now socially, all I'm doing is I'm impure, or I'm not developed, and all I'm doing is making more trouble with my ego in the world. And it's a lot of, I hear it a lot. I'm not ready to act in the world because I'm not clear enough. Spiritual enough, powerful enough. And I think it's a view that needs a little bit of attention. The first thing is, it's quite an interesting reflection, that we don't really know what it means to be ready until we're ready. That we may say we're not ready, but we don't actually know what that means to be ready. Until we're ready. So that means we can't really know this. And all we can know, bhikkhoshi, with difficulty, is at this moment what we are, what we feel about ourselves. And I think that the right view, the view of interbeing, really helps with this issue. Because the view of interbeing says we are influencing any way, whether we like it or we don't, whether we know it or we don't. We are already influencing each other. We cannot help it. We're not isolated in a box. We radiate, we influence, we talk, we act, we educate, we create, we are role models for others, even if we don't know it. We can't help being like that. And so, if we say we're not ready, to some extent, it's a judgment of ourselves. It's a kind of self-judgment. It's a kind of self-doubt. It's a kind of view or insecurity we have about ourselves. Because we're anyway influencing all the time. And our task is to purify, to energize this influence, to keep on the spiral of purifying, cleaning, working, but of course we influence, of course we're ready, because we're doing it anyway. The Eightfold Path, a Buddhist path of spiritual practice, which involves meditation, but it also involves action, it also involves speech, it also involves awareness, ethics, many other elements. It's never finished. It's a sense that we're on the path and we keep revolving around the path or spiraling. But that it's never that, we've done it now. Or, I'm not doing it yet. I'm not ready for the Eightfold Path. First of all, I have to do a little bit of meditation practice. Or first of all, I have to go to school. It's that the Eightfold Path just gets more and more subtle as we keep going around it. Being aware of speech now, in 1 year's time, our speech has changed. In 1 year's time, we are less lying or less confusing or less blah 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 or less damaging with our speech. Next year a little bit more, next year a little bit more, so it goes round. Our steadiness, our concentration, or qualities of energy, of ethics, of morality, all the aspects of the spiritual life just keep going round. And it's interesting that in the Buddhist teachings, the Eightfold Path, the path of practice in life, is both before and after awakening. So if we have a little bit of awakening, we're still, a little bit of freedom, we're still on the Eightfold Path. Before, we're still on the Eightfold Path. We're still, in other words, on training. In other words, the whole world is a kind of kindergarten, gun-related for us, and we're playing in the Argaz Chol, the sand pit, and just getting better and better at it all the time. And we can don't need to judge ourselves. Where am I in this process? We just act with more purity and more wisdom all the time. So we don't need to worry too much about, am I ready? And there's another kind of element to that am I ready question, which is, I feel such an ego. I feel I'm so egoistic. I feel I'm so full of ego. And I should be less egoistical before I can act. If I act with all my ego, I'm just making a mess. And the truth is that we can't act without ego. We are ego. We have ego. We have self. And it's illusion to say that we don't act from self, because we do act from self. But slowly, slowly, by meeting the self in all its various colours and shapes and expressions and forms and the self is a kaleidoscope. In Hebrew, the same word, kaleidoscope. Yeah, kaleidoscope. The self is a kaleidoscope. And we meet this kaleidoscope again and again, every moment, every minute. And slowly, slowly get to know it and get lighter with it. But it's not that we suddenly have no ego. Ego, and then pick on, do enough retreats, no ego. It's not like that. The kaleidoscope is there all the time, it just gets a little lighter, a little freer. But we all have ego. And that's fine. Ego is like a hand, you know. We use the ego, we just need to use it more wisely all the time. Just to be a little bit more soft with ourselves and say, yeah, we have egos, let's learn to use the self wisely. And slowly, slowly, in the course of our life, we can take the self less seriously. Indeed. But without concepts of self or no self, just learning to take it less seriously, this kaleidoscope, and be more aware of the self and the non-self and how it all dances together. So let's have a look at how the big view the view of interbeing generates social action in practice, in real daily life of social action. I think one of the important things is to keep hold of the big view. The view that you experienced in the exercises, for example, of the Council of Beings or of the ancestors, a big view of reality. And that's one of the differences between a spiritual orientation for social action and an ordinary orientation for social action. The big view is less self-centered, is more large, one of the places where it's important is in our goals, is in the whole issue of goals. Now, if you talk to people in the social action world, one of the things they say, you very often, conventional organizations say, the way to do things is to sit together, develop very strong and clear target and goals, and go for them. And then check ourselves, how are we in relation to our goals? Our goals may be this amount of reduction of poverty, this amount of health care, this amount of peacemaking, this... The goals create a lot of pressure on people and a lot of a burnout and stress. And the goals need to be, in a spiritual peacemaking or a spiritual oriented peacemaking, the goals need to be expanded. Some of the goals, so let's look at some of the goals. The goals conventionally are changing views, for example, in social action, trying to change views. This is politics. This is persuasion. Changing views, for example, of trying to change the consensus. It's classical politics. It's going out to persuade. It's writing articles in the newspapers. It's giving speeches, seminars, lectures. It's talking on the radio. It's media. It's getting important people to try and persuade. It is part of what we would do. We're also doing that. It's one of the goals, but it's very much not the only one. And there's many subtle ways to do this. And one of the messages that we're using in the peace walks, Shvil Zahav, we keep handing out these cards, and we keep demonstrating with what we're doing, peace walks, without language, without words, by Jews and Arabs walking silently together in the peace walk, silently, steadily, we're demonstrating another view. And the view is, peace is possible, and we're doing it right now. Look at us, this is a model of peace. In case you need a model, here it is. And it's a change of the consensus. And sometimes it's missed. People think, what are these guys doing? Walking, you know. But the truth is, anyway, views aren't changed instantly, but there'll be some people that will catch it. And some people that will read and say, oh yeah, peace is possible. And it's against the consensus view that only violence works, that we have enemies forever, that the whole of the Islamic world is just ready to kill everybody in Israel. All the views that are consensus views that stop peace and stop healing. So the views can, there are many, if our changing views is a goal, but it can be done in many, many ways, in many subtle ways. I mean, Eli, you talked about animals. And it just reminded me of a story of one of the meditation teachers in America that went into Steve Smith. He used to do sessions in Monsanto. Monsanto is a great big chemical company that produces all the pesticides and all the, you know, they kill half of the animal population in the world, killed by chemicals. And he went in there, and he was invited by the executives to do one day of meditation every 6 months or something like that. And so he decided to do metta practice there. And metta practice is about kindness to all beings. And kindness to all beings is kindness to all animals, birds, plants, insects, and so on. And he said that a few times executives from Monsanto came to him and said, "Do you mean to say that what we're doing might not be good?" I think... But I think this is changing views. And if you want to look objectively, maybe this act that he is doing, going into Monsanto and teaching kindness to all beings, all animals, all plants, has created more help to the animals in the world than anything else he could do. Like, that changes, that helps the animals, and what you're doing changes and helps the animals. And having a broader sense of how we change views, a more subtle way to change views, rather than the conventional political persuasion, which is very aggressive. So spiritual, one of the goals is changing views, but we have a more interbeing way of doing it, many more methods, many more subtle ways of doing this. I have endless problems, as I say, Tel Aviv taxi drivers, that's because I don't actually meet the conventional society that much. I'm in Sklerin and so on, and I'm in the Sangha, and so that one of the places that I meet conventional societies in taxi drivers and people on trains and so on. And when they come with a right-wing view, against us, how can you make peace? The peace is never possible. It's never. They're all, Palestinians are all terrorists and da 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 da. So I always go, what do I do? It's so tiring, and I don't really have a kind of a package of words to give in return. But gradually, I have developed one or two kind of slogans that I use, because it's really quite difficult to know what to say, and especially, it's quite difficult to know what to say. But one of the things that I tend to do now is not just shut up, which I used to do. One of the ways in which I learned to respond, I used to just be quiet and get a bit confused and sometimes say something but sometimes not. And now I keep asking, so where does that bring us? Where does that take us? I listen to you, but where does it bring us? What is the fruit of what you're saying now? What is the fruit? And questioning, taking everyone's place and questioning where it's going to take us, questioning, sending back the question, creating reflection, creating questioning. And I think this is a very important tool in changing views. Just asking the questions. So that's about views. Changing the situation is another goal. And of course, this is humanistic work. This is changing the situation can be bringing food to hungry people. It's changing the situation. At the moment, your compassion says, that's what's needed. I need now to go and collect money and give it to somebody. Your heart is telling you this. And that's fine. This is a natural response. We're talking about response ability. The ability to respond. We're talking about compassion. It's the heart responding to the need. At this moment, you need to go and do that. That's part of what we're talking about. Never forget a story that's been with me all my life from a time when I was walking in Nepal, and there was this sadhu, maybe some of you have already heard this story, but I'll say it anyway. a sadhu there in the mountains called Kali Baba, and we were passing through a place in Nepal on the trek, a place called Dulukel, and we sat every night with Kali Baba in a little hut in the grounds of the temple, tiny little hut in the space of two beds or something, but always full of people and villagers. And we sat with him and sat with him night after night after night, and all of a sudden he disappeared. No one knew where he went, he didn't tell anybody, and he went. Well, we went also on walking in Nepal, and we came back a month later. It was about 6 weeks later, and we went through the village, and Kali Baba appeared again. And we asked, where had he been? What happened? And the villagers said, he suddenly appeared with a sack of, heavy sack, full of tiny Indian coins, paisa, small, not even rupees, like bits of rupees, paisas, they're like small money which is grushing, but a big sack. And he walked over to the school building that there wasn't really a building for the children in the village. He walked over, he put the sack down and said, build a classroom for the children. And then he went back to his hut and sat with his practices and his mantras and his and so on. And it just, something spontaneously came to him, and he went off and he did it and he came back. No words, no this, but the action so powerful and so clear, and just so devoted and directed and intended, and to change the situation by a clear act. Another goal, which is also, and here we're talking about a goal which is rather beyond the usual conventional social work, and this is the goal of changing the atmosphere. And this is a bit, Shiri spoke about this yesterday, that it's largely forgotten that wars and suffering are created by a certain emotional atmosphere in the society, an emotional climate. Like, it feels quite okay for politicians to increase anxiety in the population by saying, we're under threat, you see it now in the elections and the Bechirot. Everybody's trying to frighten the people more because that helps them to get power. So frightening the people more. We're the strong ones, we're the strong ones, we will. And it creates a climate of fear and anxiety and insecurity. And the atmosphere of insecurity leads to violence, leads to more suffering, leads to more, the children grow up in an atmosphere of fear. The wars start because people can't think clearly, they can't feel, their heart is closed. There's a climate of fear in the population, and all kinds of things. I mean, the example of Vietnam is a very good example, because the climate of fear in America, rich, secure, confident country, needing to go to the other side of the world to kill 3 million Vietnamese peasants, because there was a climate of fear in America that maybe if the Vietnamese peasants could somehow, through the domino effect, eventually destroy America. I mean, it's kind of an absurd, and so much suffering from an atmosphere of insecurity, fear, anxiety. So changing the atmosphere is very, very important. And here is a goal which is wider than the usual goal of social work, and it's changing the atmosphere of greed, hate and delusion. And sometimes, for example, here is where cheerfulness works. You go into And remember how important it was in the dialogues in Nablus with the Israelis and Palestinians, who brought Israelis every month to talk with Palestinians in deep dialogue. And one of the tools we used is cheerfulness, friendliness. In Buddhist language, metta, loving kindness. We talked about this a little bit, we practiced it. Loving kindness. Loving kindness, healing the atmosphere of anxiety, healing the atmosphere of fear, of insecurity, of anger, of them against us. A friendliness that's just melting, softening. And suddenly people don't know why they've changed. Because the friendliness works under the guards, under the... people don't know why they've changed, but there's just less anxiety in the atmosphere. And suddenly the people involved find themselves doing different things. It's just happening. It works in the subconscious. And we also use this in Shul Zahav, in the Middle Way, and in other organizations. We use this as a tool. We go out, and one of the instructions, giving all the time, when we go on peace walks or peace activities, is friendliness. And for this to happen, you need a lot of inner work. We need work inside the organization, inside the group. If people don't feel the friendliness, so we can work on it, we can help it, we can guide it, we can create an atmosphere inside the group itself, and that's a very important part of the work, to grow, to develop a quality of friendliness and metta inside the group itself. A lot happens from music, from dancing. You think of one of the major tools that broke down apartheid in South Africa is music and dance. One of the major forces that broke, that's friendliness. That's just changing the atmosphere. Which is, again, a little more subtle, is creating peace leaders, empowering individuals. So in other words, every act that you do is a training of others. We had a lot of criticism from the politicians in Nablus, and at a certain time we couldn't go any further. It happened, and the program ended because of two reasons. One is the criticisms that we had from politicians in Nablus, that is Palestinian Authority politicians. The other one was the Intifada, the recent Intifada. But the politicians said to us, we don't know what you're doing with this dialogue, with these dialogues, with these workshops. It's clear to us that you didn't get rid of one settlement. With all 3 years of dialogues you've had of Israelis and Palestinians, what's the result? And we tried to explain that the result is an education for change. That we're doing education. We're not doing direct political action. It's something else. And we try to explain that we're creating here peace leaders, Palestinians and Israelis. And the people that come to our workshops then go out in their community and they make peace. And it's really happened. I mean, for example, Netta Golan. Netta Golan, maybe you've heard about her, and she's a great peace leader, very courageous. And she was part of the Nablus group, and she in a way learned through the activities and through the workshops and became very empowered. She wasn't empowered before, she was empowered. She was before that she didn't know what where she was and what she was doing, and she was looking for, and she was a bit confused, and through the workshops she really felt empowerment. And not only her, but many, many people, and Palestinians also, and school teachers, Palestinian school teachers and professionals and social workers came, and they really felt empowered. So creating empowerment is a goal which is more subtle, but it's in the interbeing world. It's what goes out into the community and makes change. So the big view says That's good enough. That's one of the goals. But we couldn't express it. They didn't understand it too well. They were looking for real measurable results. They're not always measurable. In the world of interbeing, the results are not easy, not always measurable. Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. Shut up. A key to all of this is that we can't be locked in goals. Even if our goals are wide and broad, we also need to pay attention to the way we do things. And this is where things get very different from conventional organizations. Quote from Padmasambhava, who said, "Keep your view as wide as the sky, but sieve your actions as finely as flour." So can someone translate in Hebrew? Misanen? Or maybe I'll try and... Hamabat shelcha rachav kmo hashamayim, v'ha'masim shelcha misanen otam kmo kemach dak. Ken, ze domeh shumacha. Ken. So I think that the actions you do, be watchful of your actions in the awareness of present moment. And this is where goals and means have to be in balance. You cannot be just after goals, because here we get all the problems which are so much. You cannot imagine how much waste of energy, of heart, and of goodness comes through not paying attention to this issue. And this is a real, real major problem in the social change world. And we've been discussing it a lot with organizations like Shatil. You're going to hear today or tomorrow about an organization called ACODA. ACODA is a peace or a social change training, educating organization which we started, a few people, to help people in education for a spiritual-oriented social action. And we found, when we started to go to organizations like Shatil, the New Israel Fund, that they are desperate, because inside the organization there is so much shrika, burnout, so much tiredness, and so much people coming in, getting exhausted, getting fed up, saying this organization trying to do good, but there's so much anger inside the organization, so much ego, so much waste, so much fighting, and we're losing so much energy and hope of people because there's a lot of this stuff going on: anger, ego, disputes, conflicts, and so on. And there's a lot of pressure, and pressure to make change, and pressure to fulfill goals, and speediness, and busyness, and over-busyness, and exhaustion, and so they asked ACODA to help teach other methods. And hopefully we're starting to do that slowly, slowly, with workshops and so on. And there is an awareness in the social change world that something needs to be different. Many, many organizations, big organizations, know this, but they're not quite sure what to do about it. And what needs to be different is that your way you do things has to be in balance with the goals you have. They have to be matching. They have to be part. So in other words, you can't create peace if you're doing it through anger. Because in the world of interbeing, anger sows seeds of more anger. If you think of the story of the echo that we read yesterday, anger makes more anger. So you're trying to make peace, but at the same time you're making more anger. You're shouting for peace, you're hitting people for peace, people start wars for peace. Many, many wars. I think half the wars in the world are fought in the name of peace. Governments say, this is a war for peace. This is a war to end war. This is a war to make peace. I mean, it's happening now in Iraq. We are making peace in Sedah. You know, and the people benefit. And the people are crying. They say, well, I don't see American bombs falling on us. What's going on? You have to... The action and the goal have to be in balance. You make peace through peacefulness. Peacefulness makes peace. So the goals and the means have to be in balance. And it comes from an understanding that all the time we are radiating what's inside us. We are bringing out from inside to outside. We're interaction, interbeing. So we influence, we influence each other.
Never mind, the point is, there is no way to peace, this is the way.
Yeah, that's on the cards, the Shilza have cards. It is a quote that Thich Nhat Hanh uses and used in his books, and he took it from an American writer earlier, it's not his, he took it from an American writer from, so I found, but yeah, exactly. There's no way to peace. Peace is the way. This embodies... So you need a lot of inner work for this. You need a lot of dialogue for this. I remember that we had discussions. Sometimes you have to have difficult discussions. You need a line, a boundary. I remember we had discussions with the Palestinians. The Palestinians wanted on one of the peace walks to go with flags, Palestinian flags. And we said, well, Palestinian flags, but presumably you don't want Israeli flags, but we're Israelis. So they said, no, we can't have Israeli flags. It's a peace walk. We must have Palestinian flags only. Well, are you happy with no flags? No, we must have flags because this is meaningful to us. It's important to us. This is our... a symbol of our desire for freedom from occupation and suppression. So we said no flags. If you want flags, not us. We were very clear in the end. There's a line. We would not go that way. No flags. We can have talk. Okay, not so silent. Never mind. Won't be a silent peace walk. Never mind. But flags, no. So sometimes we need a kind of a boundaries and to draw, this is not the way. And to be clear about this, because the methods are so important and so powerful. So, to finish, the holistic world, in the holistic view, in the broad view, I think I like the word healing. I think that all social change is healing. I see it one big healing. Healing the planet, healing the self, healing conflicts. And with that sense of healing, I think we can't go wrong, because healing is a method. You can't heal a wound with anger. You can't heal with the wrong ways. Healing is a good metaphor for what a wider kind of social change agenda is about. Thank you. A couple of minutes, I think, for questions, and then I have to run to the bus.